It's a nightmare. Four horsemen bringing death and destruction to all humanity. They're known as the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse, images that spring from Revelation chapter 6. Are these simply cryptic messages for early Christians, allegory of God's judgments, or prophecies of events yet to come? Today, we'll explore how the message of these ancient horsemen is important to you today. These are the headlines. In a moment, we're going to look at the important news behind the headlines.
Welcome to the Good News Program, presented by the publishers of the Good News Magazine. The Good News doesn't try to cover up today's problems. This is a program that dares to look at today's dilemmas and ask the questions that must be asked. It seeks the answers that must be found, answers that can only be discovered from the pages of your Bible. Please join Gary Petty for a discussion of today's Good News subject.
It's the images that fill the dreams of movie makers. Four galloping horses carrying terrifying riders bringing death and destruction. The ultimate images of doom. The four horsemen of the apocalypse. The images of these four horses and riders are found in Revelation chapter 6 and have intrigued generations of Bible scholars and students. Riding across the prophetic landscape, these dramatic images cast a pall of terror upon the world. Is there a meaning in Revelation chapter 6 for our troubled and uncertain world today? Do these images foretell great calamity for the earth's inhabitants? Well, joining us today in the Good News studio here outside Cincinnati, Ohio, is the managing editor of World News and Prophecy, Darris McNeely. You know, Darris, it's been a while since you've been here. It's great to have you back.
Gary, it's good to be back with you again.
Okay, let's get right into it. You know, since the Apostle John wrote Revelation in the first century, people have been fascinated with the four horsemen of Revelation 6. Why do you think there's such a fascination with this particular passage?
Well, I think, Gary, the scenes of horsemen riding across the scene, the different colored horsemen and the voice of thunders that Revelation chapter 6 talks about there is in itself a dramatic scene that has just captured people's imagination. And they're dealing with subjects such as war and false religion, famine and pestilence that have been endemic to mankind's whole history and have impacted everyone on the face of the earth at one time or the other. So the subject matter and the dramatic way in which it is presented is something that just stands out in a stark contrast.
You know, I think the Left Behind series have had, of course, phenomenal success, but I think a lot of people are looking at those fictional accounts and thinking that's what Revelation says. It's interesting that the publishers of the Left Behind series are releasing a new set of fiction based on Revelation that claims a totally different interpretation of that book. In fact, the new set is based on the interpretation that all the events of Revelation took place back in the first century to the early church. So do the prophecies of Revelation concern events yet to happen? Have some already happened? Have they all happened? How should we look at Revelation?
Well, the events of Revelation are portraying events that are yet to happen in large parts. Some events have transpired incrementally down through the centuries, but the majority of the grand and dramatic events of the book are yet to take place. There is this debate in theology that says that that the Revelation took place already in the past, first century, second century fulfillment. But Gary, when you really look at the events that are described in this book, Revelation, these events could only occur in our time and beyond, with the events, with the technology that is available, the numbers of people that we're talking about, plus the fact that this book speaks of sweeping events that could only be taking place now and not relegated to one very small part of the world in the first century. This is a book of grand scale. And when you look at it and step back and look at it in that way, you see that it is something that can only be taking place today and on into the future.
So the global implications of the book mean that it's still a lot of things have yet to happen.
Absolutely. And on a global scale, as you say, not just a tiny corner of the Mediterranean world, the Roman Empire or Judea of the first century.
With so many different interpretations of Revelation, and probably the book of Revelation has more interpretations than any other book of the Bible, what are some of the keys that we can use to help understand and have a proper understanding of this book?
Well, they begin in the first chapter. First of all, it shows that it is the revelation of Jesus Christ. Many Bibles have that it's the revelation of John. I think the New King James, however, corrected that old misconception. But it's a revelation of Jesus Christ. Actually, it's a revelation of the Father through Christ. And so it begins there. And it is his revealing of events that are going to take place in the world in our time. He also says that it's the time setting is what is called the Day of the Lord, which is a specific event of time of God's intervention into the human affairs. You see also through the book that there are patterns of seven. There are seven seals. There are seven plagues. There are seven last plagues. So there are three patterns of seven that also step you through the book. So once you understand that overall framework, then you can begin to put into all the other the chapters and the events and the that are being described there.
Now you talk about the seven seals. Now Revelation 6. I want to really go to the four horsemen of the apocalypse. But Revelation 6 is in the context of the seven seals. So maybe explain what the seven seals are.
Well, the first seven seals are events that are opened out by Christ upon the earth. But the what are called the four horsemen of the apocalypse are the first four seal of the first seven seals of this section that we're talking about here in Revelation. All right, so Christ begins to unveil these events that are going to take place upon the earth, and as we will see as we go through these seven or these four first four seals. They have always taken place, but the intensity that these unveilings talk about show an intensity that has never really taken place in any past part of history. And when they are unveiled, there's going to be a dramatic time that's going to be unmistakable in terms of the severity of its impact upon the earth.
Now, you know, it says they're sealed. In other words, these are events that are somehow hidden. They have to
right.
be opened. Who opens them?
Well, the key to that is in chapter 5 of Revelation, where it says that there is only one person worthy to open those seals, and that is the Lamb. That's very clearly laid out there in chapter 5, which precedes chapter 6 and the unveiling of these horsemen. So it's Jesus Christ who unveils and opens these seals and has total control over their events on the earth.
So it's very important. These events, if you're a Christian, these events can only be revealed through Jesus Christ. So these are very important events that are yet to happen. And we're going to take an in-depth look at the four horsemen of Revelation 6 and explore their message for us today. But we're going to tell you about the literature we're giving away. So don't go away. We'll be right back.
The book of Revelation, the last book in the Bible, is to many people its most confusing. They find its strange symbols and images puzzling and mysterious. But it need not be so. The book's very name means a revealing, a way to gain understanding. Its first verse tells us it was written to reveal things which must shortly take place. We've prepared an exciting, eye-opening new booklet, The Book of Revelation Unveiled, to help you understand what will take place in the days ahead. For your free copy, call right now, 1-800-966-9232. In our free booklet, The Book of Revelation Unveiled, you can discover the truth of this surprising message Jesus Christ brought. There is no cost or obligation. 1-800-966-9232. Order today.
Have you had about all the bad news you can take? Maybe you could use some good news. The Good News is a full-color, bi-monthly magazine that brings you the best news you can hear, and always from a biblical perspective. All literature on this program is provided free as an educational service in the public interest by the United Church of God. It is absolutely free, and there is no charge or obligation. Simply call 1-800-966-9232. The magazine is free. The contents are priceless. The number again is 1-800-966-9232. Or visit us on the web at www.ucg.org.
Welcome back. We're discussing the Four Horsemen of Revelation 6 with Darris McNeely, pastor and managing editor of World News and Prophecy. So let's take a look at what Revelation actually describes here, what it says about the seals. And we see what John saw. In Revelation 6, verse 1, it says, "Now I saw when the Lamb, or Jesus Christ, opened one of the seals, and I heard one of the four living creatures saying with a voice like thunder, "Come and see." And I looked, and behold, a white horse. And he who sat on it had a bow, and a crown was given to him, and he went out conquering and to conquer. Now, there's a lot of different interpretations of what this rider represents. Some actually say it's Christ. Some say it's some kind of warring power. Some say it's a representation of Christ. What is this?
Gary, this is not speaking of Jesus Christ in Revelation 6, although many commentators will say that it is. So there is a distinction. It's very similar to Christ. But when you compare the image and the picture of Christ in Revelation chapter 19, which is the image of the returning Jesus Christ at the time of the end and his return to this earth, he too is on a white horse. But the distinction is that in Revelation 19, Christ is carrying a sword. Now, this image in Revelation 6 is carrying a bow. And the conquering and to conquer, in a sense, very similar to what Christ does when he returns to this earth as he conquers the warring nations and those in opposition to him. But this is a different Christ. This is a different form of religion meant to look very much like Christ, but it's a totally different deception that is taking place, and it's not Jesus Christ that's being pictured here.
Of course, Jesus Christ comes at the end of the seals, and this is the beginning of the seals.
And Christ is in control of the seals. He's opening the seals, in a sense, telling the story. And so, again, that's another point to understand in identifying who this is speaking of.
Now, it is interesting, of course, you're saying this appears to be like Christ, so it's a false Christianity. And it's interesting that in the Olivet Prophecy that Jesus gave, not just before his death, he talked about a people who would come with a false Christianity, claiming to be Christ. So we can put these two things together. There's a connection between these two prophecies.
You can. You mentioned the Olivet Prophecy, which is in Matthew chapter 24. And there Christ was on the Mount of Olives speaking to his disciples, and they were asking questions about the signs that would precede his coming and the time and the end of this age. And that sequence of scriptures in Matthew 24 is an exact parallel to what we have here in Revelation chapter 6. And the very first sign that Christ mentioned to look for in Matthew 24 is that of those coming saying that they are Christ, but they are bringing a false message. They're false Christs and deceiving people. And so when we marry that with what we see here in Revelation chapter 6 with this first seal, this first rider on the white horse, we are seeing and talking about a deceptive form of religion that holds people in sway, but it is not the true faith that Christ brought.
You know, which I think brings us to a very hard set of questions. When we look at that first century church and we look at what it taught, we look at what Jesus taught, what the apostles taught. Now it's almost 2,000 years later. And we have a prophecy that Christianity will somehow degenerate from what it originally was intended. Can we look at ourselves as Christians? Can we look at mainstream Christianity? Can we look at the Christian world we live in and say, how far are we from that first century church? What is different in what we do now and then?
There's quite a bit that is different today in what passes for traditional Christianity that has developed over 19 centuries compared to what you read about in the Gospels and particularly the Book of Acts. There is a complete different picture there. The church that we see in the Book of Acts, the church that Jesus founded, the apostles went out and started churches throughout the Mediterranean world, they were keeping the Sabbath day. They were keeping the seventh-day Sabbath, the fourth commandment of God. They were keeping the holy days. They were keeping Passover. We find the church meeting on the day of Pentecost in Acts chapter 2. We find the references to the Day of Atonement. Those were the holy days and festivals God gave to Israel. The church was keeping them. Christ was keeping them. They were teaching them to the Gentile people that they were going to take the gospel to. Something happened. Through the centuries, layers of tradition and other ideas came into the story of the church and completely changed the church that Jesus founded to sort today. What we see today as Christianity is a completely different picture and completely different faith than what we read from the pages of the Bible. That's very clear.
Yet we, you know, people have the Bible. People know what, you know, is generally called primitive Christianity.
Right.
And, you know, there's a belief that somehow the Christianity today is superior to what is quote unquote primitive Christianity. You know, in this short amount of time, maybe just summarize how, over a 2,000-year period, how does that happen? How does what Jesus start and form metamorphize into something that really is in many ways quite different? I mean, what happened historically?
Well, much of the information and the clues are right in the scriptures. Christ, Peter, Paul gave warning of division that would come of heretics. Paul warned of wolves in sheep's clothing very early in the story of the church in the first century. In fact, in many of the gospel or the epistles, we find evidence of this. False teaching came in, differing ideas. Paul spoke of a different gospel. So there were differing ideas that sprung up. There were those who wanted to seek a following for themselves. After a few decades, persecution came on the church. You had a combination then of persecution, of heresy. There was a developing anti-Semitism or anti-Jewish feeling that was creeping into the Roman world that impacted the true believers, the faithful who had responded to the gospel and to Christ's teachings, to where the church eventually became very divided, became very scattered with the upset and the turmoil of that first century period of time. We find that there, by the time we get to the end of the book of Acts, we see certain problems taking place. And when you see perhaps 30, 40, 50 years later from history, the image and the pictures of the church that begins to come out of the mists of that historical period, we find a completely different church that is beginning to be, it's on the scene historically. They are not keeping the Sabbath, for instance. They're beginning to keep other days, other festivals that are derived from pagan worship. And so we see a completely different church than that which Jesus Christ founded. Persecution, heresy, anti-Semitism all play a part of that in creating that. And then through the centuries, that church that grew large, layered so much tradition and so many competing ideas to get us to where we are today.
So when you look at it, you know, it is interesting. You look at Paul's writing to Galatians, the book of Galatians,
right.
Colossians, 1 Corinthians. These churches were already in trouble. I think a lot of people don't realize that. The early church was already in trouble within 30 or 40 years after
less than that.
Jesus founded it.
Within just a couple of decades after Christ's founding, that church was in trouble.
You know, Revelation 6 isn't the only place in the Bible that prophesies a great false religion that will deceive the entire world before the second coming of Jesus Christ. These are important prophecies for you to understand. We'll be right back after this.
We've prepared an exciting, eye-opening new booklet, The Book of Revelation Unveiled, to help you understand what will take place in the days ahead. This 32-page full-color booklet will take you through the major themes of the Book of Revelation, helping you discover how it all fits together. For your free copy, call right now 1-800-966-9232. In our free booklet, The Book of Revelation Unveiled, you can discover the truth of this surprising message Jesus Christ brought. There is no cost or obligation. 1-800-966-9232. Are you tired of hearing nothing but bad news? Well, here's some good news. You can receive a year's subscription to the Good News Magazine absolutely free. The Good News Magazine isn't a Pollyannish cover-up of today's problems. It is a magazine that dares to look at today's problems and ask the questions that must be asked. The Good News seeks the answers that must be found, answers that can only be discovered in the pages of your Bible. Today's radio program is sponsored by the publishers of the Good News magazine. Your free subscription to the Good News has already been paid. You will never be sent a bill or be obligated in any way. Simply call 1-800-966-9232. That's 1-800-966-9232 for your free subscription to the Good News behind the headlines.
The Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse. Darris McNeely and I have been discussing the meaning of the white horse mentioned in Revelation 6. Now, Darris, you've said that the white horse represents a great religion that will present itself as Christianity, the Christianity brought by Jesus. What other passages tell us of a false religion that will happen before Christ's second coming?
Well, Gary, let's go back to Matthew 24, again, the Olivet prophecy, where Jesus himself was warning of just such an event that would take place. In Matthew 24, verse 24, he told his followers that false Christs, false prophets will rise and show great signs and wonder to deceive, if possible, even the elect, which is referring to those who are the called and faithful of Christ. And so the elect, the people of God, who keep the commandments of God and have the testimony of Jesus Christ, would be susceptible to this great deception. So that is where, in one sense, it begins, the warnings there. They follow through in the gospel accounts and the epistles of Paul and others. In 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, the Apostle Paul has a remarkable prophecy of an individual that is called a man of sin, who's revealed before the day of Christ, actually comes and stands out in this end-time deception that's created by this figure who, it says, exalts and opposes himself above all that is called God or that is worship, and who will sit in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. So here's an individual, a religious figure, who claims to be this deity and God himself. And Paul warned of that, and that opposition obviously was already at work in his time, and he was warning the church about it at that time. But prior to Christ's return, it's going to grow according to the work of Satan, and there are going to be lying wonders and power and signs that are going to deceive people in the future.
You know, that's interesting. You wonder, how could Christians be deceived? But as you said, if he's doing great miracles and great wonders, it would appear that the very power of God is performing these things.
You're right. It will. And it's going to be a remarkable event in our modern technological age. We pride ourselves in being secular and more sophisticated. But when these events begin to take place, when miracles and signs and wonders, heavenly signs, being commanded by an individual seemingly who claims to be God, it will turn people's attention, affection, and devotion on a dime, just like that.
You know, we've looked at Revelation 6. We've tied that into the Christ Olivet prophecy. We've looked at 2 Thessalonians. There's an interesting prophecy in Revelation 13, which would take two programs alone just to cover. But there's about two beasts that come up. Now, how can we relate this false religion to Revelation 13?
In Revelation chapter 13 is an image of two beasts that arise out of the sea. And one of them has had a wound that has been healed. And they worship the dragon, it says, who gave authority to the beast. This is Revelation 13, verse 4. And they worship the beast, saying, who is like the beast, who is able to make war with him. And he was given a mouth, speaking great things and blasphemy. And he begins to deceive and has great authority. This entity that is being described is a false religion. It is tied in with the image we just talked about in 2 Thessalonians 2 of a man of sin who begins to do great wonders. And then there's a second beast that arises as well that represents a temporal governmental authority that has great power. And these two combine forces and combine their power at this time that Revelation 17 actually even gives more details about, that is going to have great sway and impact upon the nations and peoples of the earth.
So we have two, if you will, individuals or two powers involved here,
right?
One secular and one religious, which sort of brings to another question. I mean, once again, it's hard to imagine in our sort of sophisticated, secular, multicultural world that exists in the Christian world, Europe and the United States and Canada, that the masses could be somehow deceived by a religious figure. What is it that is in human beings that allows us to be deceived so easily through false religion?
Well, I think that there is this need that people don't recognize to connect to a spiritual meaning in life to begin with. No matter how secular people's become, there is still this quest for a spiritual existence, a spiritual life, and that is just an inherent part of human nature, regardless of how we try to rationalize that away. But when you couple that with times that the Bible describes that are going to be momentous times that are going to be taking place, and dramatic economic upheavals, political upheavals, many times more than what we saw on 9/11, September 11th attacks in America, people are going to be turning for answers, not just spiritually, but also some very strong powers that can correct and bring back a stability to their life. Mm-hmm. And religion is going to play a part in that. That's what the scriptures show. And there's going to be that combination with a political entity that will no doubt bring that about to restore normalcy. But with that will come great power. And we're being set up for that right now. There are voices that are, in a sense, calling for that already in some areas and recognizing that as a potential solution in our world with some of the terrorism that parts of the world are facing. So you can see various signs of just how calls are going out for individuals with certain assertive power and authority to bring us back to stability and keep our life normal as we would like to have it.
You know, we've covered almost the entire program. We've only covered one.
One seal.
So you'll
one
back.
Horseman.
You'll be back with us next week?
Be glad to come back.
Great. Good. We'll be joined next week by Darris again to discuss more the ride of the four horsemen as false religion cuts through the nations in the last days, gathering a religious movement. This will be without parallel in history. But this is going to be just the first of a number of enormous events that are going to happen to lead up to the return of Jesus Christ. And to order your free copy of the Book of Revelation Unveiled, call 1-800-966-9232. And no one is ever going to ask you for money. All literature offered on this program is free. Join us next time when we continue to explore what the Bible really says about you and your future. For Good News Radio, I'm Gary Petty.
The Book of Revelation, the last book in the Bible, is to many people its most confusing. They find its strange symbols and images puzzling and mysterious. But it need not be so. The book's very name means a revealing, a way to gain understanding. Its first verse tells us it was written to reveal things which must shortly take place. We've prepared an exciting, eye-opening new booklet, The Book of Revelation Unveiled, to help you understand what will take place in the days ahead. For your free copy, call right now, 1-800-966-9232. In our free booklet, The Book of Revelation Unveiled, you can discover the truth of this surprising message Jesus Christ brought. There is no cost or obligation. 1-800-966-9232. Order today.
You've been listening to the Good News Radio program, presented by the publishers of the Good News Magazine. We seek the answers that must be found, answers that can only be discovered from the pages of your Bible. To receive your free copy of the literature offered on today's program, please call toll-free 1-800-966-9232. There is absolutely no cost or obligation. 1-800-966-9232.